So my name is Craig McNeil. I'm Applied Physics Lab, working a lot with Derek. And I'm going to show you some data that we collected on the float recovery cruise after Meg to study the whale. And we've done a bunch of biogeochemistry measurements, and including some mass spec analysis of dissolved gases, inert gases, in collaboration with Mark Altabert and Laura, Matt Stapmuth, Nathaniel Ostrom in Michigan State, and Simone Allen at PMEL, who done the analysis for the dissolved inorganic carbon system. And lots of other collaborations as well with people which are just starting up. So let me jump in. So I'm just going to give you a very brief review of why I'm here talking about gas exchange and biology and things like that. Eric and I are funded by NSF to study air sea gas exchange at extreme wind speeds, and big science questions there relate to the role of tropical cyclones in global carbon budgets. And carbon dioxide is exchanged between the atmosphere and the ocean, and in the low latitude regions there are areas of high PCO2 where CO2 is actually vented back to the atmosphere. Is the presumption. And with hurricanes and typhoons being very energetic, and the mixing being very energetic, lots of wave breaking, then we can expect a serious influx of carbon dioxide back to the atmosphere. How do we model all of this and parameterize it? So these are the science questions. Here's the next science question. Is this
dead? No, to this side. Are you getting ready? Yeah. Maybe you can
do the one. Give the
other one. It's expensive. Oh. Is this one of my own? A little spacey. So these are the processes that we're looking at, gas exchange, okay? So wave breaks at sea surface and exchanges gas, liberates CO2, say, back to the atmosphere. Okay? But at the same time, there's also surface currents that are dragging these bubbles that are created from the breaking wave down into the ocean where they supersaturate the ocean. So let's jump to the shipboard measurements that we made in the ship. So the recovery cruise was all about picking up all of the gear, all the floats in the water. I'm going to zoom in on this area here. And basically, this is a pre-typhoon Maggie measurements. We come down, we wait south, we come back up, sneak up after the storm's passed, and sample. So here's the sea surface temperature from the underlay measurements. There's a serious cooling regionally that occurs before and after. Okay, so this is all after, this is before. But, and you can see the cold wake, obviously, in here. But the larger part is also a cold wake because really you've got regional cooling, okay, from mixing, with lots of variability still occurring. So this is a traditional cold wake region here, which is also salty, but lots of regional variability as well. And these are casts, CPD cast 1, 3, 4, 5. So the TSG wasn't working before that. So here's the latitude plot of temperature. This is a cold wake, okay? And width of about 60 kilometers, and a SST drop of about 0.75 Celsius. So what I'm going to show you now is some dissolved gas measurements in the coldest part of the wake and also just in the outside of it. So this is not very clear, I'm sorry, but so oxygen and nitrogen. So oxygen is biologically active. There's a biological profile there, okay? There's a subsurface oxygen maximum associated with the biology. That's chlorophyll, presumably maximum, deep down about 80 meters or so, and the phytoplankton growing, producing oxygen. So when you mix that profile, then you have a change in the mixed layer oxygen that's determined by the initial profile, but also by the gas exchanges occurring at the same time, okay? This is why nitrogen's nice, because it doesn't have all this biology involved in it, and you can think of it as a proxy for abiotic oxygen, okay? So after the storm in the coldest waters, we see high oxygen, high nitrogen levels, up to about 103%, slightly lower outside, and in this particular case, in this pass-through of a cold wave, we have a low oxygen and a high oxygen here, but much lower levels. The key point is lots of variability in the oxygen. So this nitrogen is easier to interpret, and this is presumably associated, these high nitrogen levels are presumably associated with the bubbles from the surface getting taken down into the water column and dissolving. So here's some of the CPD cast profiles, lots of variability in temperature, okay, depending on where you are, but generally a temperature decrease between before and after. Salinity variability as well, mostly a salinity decrease, a salinity increase, but still lots of variability, okay, in that small latitudinal range. So in the background of interpreting this large variability in the water masses, my job is to try and interpret the variability in dissolved carbon budgets and oxygen, okay? So this is a challenge. So my job, first of all, truly to understand the oceanography before I can start interpreting the changes in the biogeochemical measurements. But here they are nonetheless. So with vertical profiles of we measure dissolved inorganic carbon, which is high carbon, deeper waters. When you mix it up, you generally get an increase in dissolved inorganic carbon as the storm goes by. Oxygen, I mentioned, is subsurface oxygen maximum. Okay, oxygen increases both by mixing up this high oxygen water into the mixed layer, but also by dissolving bubbles during the storm. And CO2 depends on where you are. So if you look at this CO2 profile, you see that it's anticorrelated with the oxygen. So when you have high oxygen, you have low CO2. That's a classic biological profile, okay? So if you notice in this case, the oxygen is maximum is higher in the yellow cast than it is in the blue. And that probably explains the difference between these here. So eventually, what we want to be able to do is do mixed layer budgets for all of this and understand how much carbon there was before and after the storm. there's a bunch of floats out there, including Tom Sanford's floats. Eric's floats had oxygen and nitrogen, two there and one there, which is the Highland speed one. So here's a time series of the wind speed estimated in the floats. This is a high wind speed float up to about 40, or whatever that is, 37, I think it's a second. And here's the dissolved gas, dissolved oxygen saturation level with respect to one standard atmosphere. And as you mix with the storm passage, the oxygen increases both by mixing into the oxygen maximum, but also by dissolving the bubbles. Okay. And supersaturation levels increase to about 103% and then fall slowly after the passage of the storm, presumably due to degassing, still high wind speeds back here, and presumably respiration as well. So to understand these properly, we do mixed-layer budgets of temperature and salinity, constrain mixing, then do an oxygen and nitrogen budget and get fluxes, and then plot fluxes versus wind speed and parameterize the fluxes in terms of gas transfer rates, which is what we're after. This is just, again, the oxygen saturation level I just showed you versus latitude. This is before the storm. These levels, the absolute levels here, probably have to nibble down depending on previous information. Hopefully we can get some calibration history on the CPD profiles, on the CPD in the prior cruise. But during the storms, the oxygen levels climb, okay, to about 103%. These are the float measurements here. Two floats here, one float here. And this is really a kind of an up or down on the observed oxygen supersaturation during the storm. And here's the cold wake, okay? This is temperature before, all the regional cooling, okay, and then the extreme cooling in the cold wake itself. Okay? So these are matching here. And this is a nice little comparison, I thought, between gas tension, which is total dissolved air pressure, and we calculate nitrogen from taking total dissolved air pressure and removing the oxygen. Okay? So I haven't done all that yet. Precisely. So I can only show you here the total dissolved air pressure, but so the oxygen is about 20% of this signal. Okay. So this is a comparison between these two hurricanes, Gustav in the Gulf of Mexico, Hurricane Francis originally in the Atlantic, and Typhoon Megi. So you can see clearly you have before the storm, as the storm comes over, gas is injected into the ocean, you supersaturate the ocean. Okay, these are dissolved air pressures, okay, going up to about 1050. Atmospheric, of course, is decreasing during the storm passage, which is enhancing the gas exchange as the driving force, the difference between the dissolved air pressure and the air pressure in the atmosphere. Okay. So, similar stories here, gas levels climb and then fall before and after. So Typhoon Megi kind of completes our third dissolved gas data set during extreme wind speeds. The Megi data are more complete and comprehensive because we have this inert carbon measurements, which we hope to be able to do the complete circle and say how much carbon was exchanged between the atmosphere and the ocean during Typhoon Megi as a whole. Really, water mass mixing and identification is the next story to be able to go deeper into this whole story. And the familiar story of the gas levels increasing during the wake by bubble dissolution. And that's a brief overview. Thanks. Yeah, so Eric's interpolated the MET data at the four locations. It's the high wind analysis, I think you call it.
In Gustav and Francis, we used H winds. For Megi, I burned my own on the drop sides.
But air pressure at the floor is important as well, which is the wind speed for determining the gas flux. Thank you.